A white man? No!
Welcome to the Unsub is a White Man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap.
Mm-hmm.
What a story.
Yes.
A real reimagining of sorts. Heavily inspired by, I would call this one.
Yeah.
We are discussing Today I Do, which originally aired February 16th, 2011. A Valentine's Day episode. Yes.
This one's about loving yourself.
What happens when you don't love yourself enough is this.
Mm-hmm. But this one kicks off and we are once again reminded about the Ian Doyle storyline because this is the only storyline they've ever cared to follow through on.
Yeah.
So
puzzling.
Prentice is talking on the phone with someone named Sia. And
Sia is very unconcerned about Prentice's drama.
I know. She's like, this guy who is going to murder us all escaped from prison and nobody knows where it is. And she's like, I'm engaged.
Yeah.
His name is Jeremy.
Excuse me. But I'm planning my wedding. It's very important.
So she warns her about Doyle. Sia assures Prentice that Lauren Reynolds died in a car accident.
Which is supposed to be Prentice's, it's then revealed
that was like her fake name from when she was undercover.
Yes.
She's like, no, he doesn't even know who I am. No worries. You're like, okay.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. We learned that a woman in Syracuse named Molly has gone missing 24 hours ago. Her car was found in a mall parking lot. There was also another woman who went missing her car was found in the same parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then was found dead a week later in Lake Onondaga, I think is how you say that. I don't know.
Camp Onawana?
But yeah, with her hands and feet smashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was anti-mortem, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible.
It is.
But both women, like in their cars, they found like weekend bags packed. So they were clearly like planning on going somewhere and then disappeared. So that's really the connection between the two.
Yeah.
Is the cars.
And you know, the stakes don't get much lower than a missing person for Criminal Minds. And then plus they're all preoccupied with the Ian Doyle stuff. And I was like, well, this is going to be a real trudge.
Yeah. They're like even Rita's like, well, we've still got 36 hours to find her. Yeah. He sticks to the pattern.
Yeah.
We got plenty of time. No worries. And then we see Molly, who is cuffed to a bed and screaming, and then it like zooms out and she's in just a really lovely upstate farmhouse.
Yes. And you know what? It is big time Misery vibes there. Like the house looks exactly the same as the Misery house.
Yes.
And I was like,
what is that? Like the clapboard or whatever it is on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like the cedar shingles.
Yes.
Then we get our first quote. It's hard to fight an enemy who has outposts in your mind. Sally Kempton.
And it made me laugh because it's basically the old timey version of letting someone live in your mind rent free.
Yeah.
As the Gen Z would say, as the youths are fond of.
Siever's back.
Yeah, thank God.
No word on where she's been for the time.
But man, I'm sure she's going to be helpful, so thank God she's here.
Yeah, she says that although there is no overlap between their lives, both women have a lot in common. Like, they're both small, and neither of them seem to like to be photographed based on probably 3 to 4 pictures that she saw of them, because these ladies were not Instagramming in this time period.
Right.
Like, okay.
How do you know they didn't like their pictures taken?
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of self-portraits in their homes.
Yeah, like no selfies. Reed notices that their college transcripts both had a lot of inconsistency, like incompletes and missing semesters and stuff. And Rossi attributes that to them being blue-collar people who had to work while they were in school. They also think that the unsub might be dating the victim since they were clearly intending to go away with someone for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or just by themselves.
Right? Like a little self-care time.
Yeah. Hutch sends Prentice to Molly's apartment and Reed and Morgan to the dump site. Seaver points out that there might not be a lot of evidence left since it's been 4 months. And Reed's like, well, you can learn a lot from looking at the area. And you're like, she was found in the middle of a lake.
Yeah. He says we'll be able to tell if you've a lot like that to see what fits the profile. Like yeah. you don't have a profile yet. You just got this case.
Yeah.
And what are you going to get from this swamp?
The body clearly like popped up in like the middle of a lake too. So yeah. Like, where are you going to go to the middle of the lake? You don't know where on this very large lake they dumped the body.
But guess what? They're going to get a lot from visiting there. So don't worry.
So yeah, we'll see where that goes. Garcia tells us that they have a suspect. His name is Lyle Donaldson, and he is Molly's ex-boyfriend who fishes where Gail's body was found, apparently. And he has been arrested twice for assault against Molly.
And so we know that he's going to be our red herring because there's no way they interview him in the first
7 minutes of the show. Mm-hmm. Rossi talks to Lyle, who says that he didn't know Gail. They're like, well, you had a class together. And he's like, yeah, there were 100 people in it. Yeah. Rossi asks him about breaking Molly's jaw, and Lyle says that they would have worked it out, except she was clearly seeing someone else, which he knows because she changed the way that she dressed and acted, and Rossi assumes that because Lyle was controlling, the unsub must also have been controlling her, just in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, Reed and Morgan go to the lake. I don't,
just to stand on the shore and look out at it.
Yeah.
Get they some just, fresh air.
Just gaze out onto the lake together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're looking at the wound photos from Gail's body. They think that he used tools instead of weapons because there's like puncture wounds that they think came from like a Phillips head screwdriver instead of like a traditional weapon. And they wonder why he would have left the body in an easily discoverable spot instead of hiding it better when this unsub is clearly all about controlling everything.
Mm-hmm.
So then Rossi goes and talks to Molly's dad, who is also the dad from Psych.
Thank you. I was like, why does this guy look so familiar?
It's like Corbin Burnson or something like that. But asks her about her abusive relationships. He just kind of like brushes it aside and he talks about how proud he is of her for being such a hard worker and says that he never hit her because Rossi's clearly implying that like you are abusive.
The dad was
abusive
too.
She seeks out abusive men.
Rossi's not a fan of this dad.
Yeah. So then at Molly's apartment where she keeps an acrostic poem of her name on the bedroom door. Did you read it?
I didn't. No. Did you write it down?
It was like... magnificent. I can't remember what the
optimistic.
It was magnificent, optimistic, lovable. I can't remember what the L was. Mm. And then you.
Oh my God.
And I was did you write this yourself? Did someone write this for you? Are you 11?
Right. Because
that looks like
problem.
Something that my kid would have taped to her bedroom door.
And this is not the first time they've introduced a victim who's supposed to be in their mid 20s and their bedroom is decorated like a middle schooler.
Yeah.
Have you ever met a 25-year-old? This is not what a 25-year-old's room would look like.
Yeah.
What is going on with these set dressers? They've done this to us before. It's bizarre.
It is really weird.
It's so strange. Nothing about her room screams like, 25-year-old woman that like went on a romantic weekend away with a man.
Yeah. Like if anything, like she's very emotionally stunted.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, she clearly had a boyfriend that she wanted to go away with for the weekend.
And they're like, what? Has she even started shaving her legs yet? Like, it's so weird.
And like all around her mirror, she has all these post-its with different motivational affirmations on them. One of which says, today I do, tomorrow I will. Like, that's not even a good... sure. Reed and Morgan wonder if this could have been a water burial, which is traditionally done by females.
Hmm.
And they're like, nothing in the profile is pointed to a female up until now. And it's like, again,
there is no profile.
You don't have a profile.
You don't have a profile.
You don't know anything about anything.
Exactly.
You've done no police work whatsoever, and you've made some wild assumptions on the plane with no information.
Mm-hmm.
And now here you are.
And here you are now just assuming it's a woman.
Yeah.
But sure.
So Prentice also says that it looks like there was a roommate living at Molly's apartment. Nobody knows who she was, but there's a very bare room and a coffee cup with so much lipstick.
So much lipstick.
On it.
You have to blot. You've got to blot the lipstick.
She did on the coffee cup.
That's her blotting cup.
Yeah. So Molly We're back to her now. Mm-hmm. She's talking to her captor, who is someone she clearly knows.
Right.
Named Jane. Mm-hmm. And she asks her to please call her father so he doesn't worry about her. Mm-hmm. And then Jane comes out, and it's Rebecca Field, who is in everything, including
October Road.
And you know what I realized?
What?
I think that Criminal Minds is like The Ring. And if you don't get someone else you know from a different TV show you are on to be the next co-star in the episode, then Ian Doyle will crawl out of your TV and kill you 7 days later. Because this is so too many coincidences in a row.
I would really like to go back to the very first episode and just 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon the entire way through.
I'm going to start building my Pepe Sylvia yarn board on my wall. It's like, this is insane.
I laughed so hard when I saw that it was her. I was like, this can't be real.
Yeah. Well, you at least recognized her from that. I was going down the IMDb thing, and then I cracked up when I saw that. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. yeah, so next episode's going to have the other guy from Psych.
Yes.
all right, so Molly tells Jane that she's scared, and Jane reassures her. Jane seems like some sort of like therapist or like spiritual mentor kind of person to her.
Life
like,
coach.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. A life coach, but also seems very unhinged.
Yeah, super,
not the kind of person super, you should be unhinged. Taking advice
but
from.
But at first I was like ready to root for Molly. Like she was kind of trying to play along and like be cool about it.
That's what I thought. But then I was like, I think she's actually buying into this. Like she thinks it's some sort of exercise.
Maybe, yeah.
Because she's like, I think maybe I'm done with this. Like she clearly thinks that it's
something. That's a good point. Because she spits out the popcorn and I was like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
It's just going to make her.
Yeah. Like, I don't think she's realized how, because she clearly trusts Jane
at
this point still and isn't quite sure how bad things are about to get. But yeah, Jane's like, we're going to have girls night and I'm going to feed you popcorn. Like, put some popcorn in her mouth and like, I don't know. If I ever put popcorn directly into your mouth, please punch me in the face and then never talk to me
again. I would have to be handcuffed or tied up for anyone to put popcorn in my mouth for me.
Like, that's not what friends do. That's weird. But yeah, Rebecca, or Molly spits it back out at her and then tells her that she's done with this. She's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Please untie me. So then Jane just snaps.
Yeah.
She tells her that she needs to stop. She's like, you spit at me.
Yeah.
You're like, no, she spit popcorn out of her mouth. But tells her to stop crossing boundaries and tells her she's an ungrateful narcissist who needs a humility check. Mm-hmm. And she pulls out a hammer and she's like, this is going to shatter all of your, like, I don't even remember what she says.
All of her highfalutinous. I don't know how she says it.
But really what it's going to shatter is her leg bones.
Yes.
She just hits her really hard with a hammer. So then Molly is in bed reciting her affirmations.
Yeah, like she's just going to affirmation her way right out of this whole thing.
Yeah, while she's icing her injured leg with like a lot of frozen vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Seaver notes the many self-help books that Molly has in the apartment because they're still going through it. And Prentice finds a box that has a diet journal and some bottles of pills in it. And they realized that she had an eating disorder, but seemed to be trying to get it under control. And then I was like, oh, that's why they brought Seaver back, because they need somebody to be like, ah, I know about adolescent girls. Because, you know, Prentice was never one. So but she couldn't have any insight.
This isn't an adolescent girl. She's 25.
Probably the same age as Seaver.
Yeah. So bizarre.
But they needed her to be like the expert on the youth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's no point in her being here. She adds nothing.
Yeah. Nothing at all.
So Gail's mom and brother come in to the station. They interview them. Gail,
how long? It was 4 months ago that Gail was found?
Yes.
Because her family is really not broken. Like, they've moved on. They're past it.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It is. Especially like just finding your kid, like your kid being found dead with no clues whatsoever.
Right.
Like,
how you don't does know that who not, did it's it. Not like there's no closure.
It's not like you're moving past it because the person responsible has been caught
right,
and is
right. justice has been served. Yeah,
exactly.
But they're just like, I don't know, the mom especially, just like, everything's fine here.
She's very much a like sweep it under the rug kind of person. Yeah. But she says that she never really had a lot of friends or a roommate because they say that like the pullout sofa was made up as a bed. And they're like, no, she didn't have anybody living with her. Her brother said that they used to be really close, but that she had changed a lot in the last few months before her death. He also says that she was very depressed and once attempted suicide. And her mom's like, no, she got better. And her brother's like, no, she just like recited a bunch of bullshit about like expelling her negative thoughts and stuff. Like he seems like.
Yeah, he's tired of the mom and all of her bullshit smoothing things over. For yeah. Sure.
So then Molly tries to get out of bed, but she falls down and finds a piece of like one of the rails in the chair is broken. So she like takes it and it's not sharp or anything. So I'm like, what are you gonna
do? I don't know what she thinks she's gonna, yeah, but she like basically hides
has
it.
A dowel rod.
Yeah.
She just puts it.
I was like, you'd have to really shove that really hard at someone to stab them with it.
Like, or like, even if you hit them, it's just going to leave like a welt.
Right.
Like,
yeah. I don't know what her plan is.
I don't either. Molly asks to please go to the hospital, but Jane won't let her. She tells her to be positive and that she's great at taking care of people. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God.
Oh no. No, you're really not.
She takes Molly's hands and tells her to visualize walking across the room and repeat the like, today I do, tomorrow I will mantra. And then we get our absolute nothing of a profile.
Yeah, it is beyond nothing. At least it's short. We're looking for a white woman in her mid-20s, blue collar, and local to the Syracuse area. She probably has a job that puts her in the role of caretaker, such as a masseuse, a nail or hairstylist, a personal trainer. Women feel comfortable opening up to her about their personal lives, details about their insecurities that she later uses to manipulate them. Someone asked, do you think she tries to pass herself off as a therapist or counselor of some sort? That's doubtful. Her narcissistic personality wouldn't allow her to listen to anything that didn't revolve around her for more than a few minutes at a time. It's hard to learn anything when you always need to be the expert. We don't think she's capable of getting a degree of any kind. Then they're asked, well, then wouldn't she need a certification for all of the jobs that you just mentioned?
Yeah.
Which she would. But she's a master manipulator. She's probably talked herself into many jobs without them realizing her credentials are fake. So wouldn't that mean she could talk herself into a therapy practice?
Yeah.
If she could. Anyway.
But she wouldn't be able to listen to somebody.
Right, right. She wouldn't be able to pretend to listen.
Yeah. Which is exactly what she's doing.
Sure.
So. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
So check gyms and spas, salons, yoga studios for employees fired in the last 2 years. We need to ID this woman as fast as possible if we want any chance of finding Molly Grandin alive. That's all we've got to go on.
Mm-hmm. It's not much. So Rossi confronts Molly's dad and asks about the eating disorder. And he's like, it wasn't that big of a deal.
She's cured. She fixed herself.
Yeah. And Rossi yells at him and tells him that keeping Molly's secrets will eventually kill her. Mm-hmm. Like, just he's like, just please tell me what you need to know.
I'm sorry. Based on the way this dad behaves, does he seem like the kind of dad that Molly is confiding her secrets in?
No. It seems like they probably just had a like, you know, we live in the same house relationship and we're like, but yeah, like they don't seem like they're like
close
sitting around feeding each other popcorn and telling each other their secrets.
They're not sharing feelings and secrets. And
yeah. He does not seem like the
so
kind of dad.
So what is he going to know that they need?
Like,
you
yeah.
know,
and like, I'm sure that like they're like, it's a family where you don't talk about your problems. And
right.
You just figure them out.
Right.
And like,
and it seems like it's just Molly and her dad, so.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, Rossi's like acting like he's like intentionally concealing things
right,
from
like
her.
This man has nothing to share.
Yeah. But he does say that she did 30 days inpatient. And it's funny because he says like the Field Center for Eating Disorders or something. And Rossi immediately knows where that's located.
Right, and that the other victim was treated there.
Yeah. Well, I guess they probably like, cause yeah, they said that she was hospitalized after her suicide attempt, but doesn't say where, but they probably would have gotten her medical records and stuff for that.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it's weird just because he says the name of like that particular department of the hospital and he immediately knows what that hospital in Syracuse happens to have.
Like, he knows everything.
It's weird.
It's why he knew all about that.
How to make biofuel.
Yes.
Out of methanol.
Yes.
Yeah. So Jane then does some like fake physical therapy with Molly.
Yes.
And tells Molly that she knows she's still thinking about Lyle And Jane tells Molly that Lyle will never change and that she's just trying to save Molly from herself. And she's like, conversation doesn't work with you. I'm just leaving. And she storms out and locks Molly back in the room. So then Sia calls Prentice to tell her that her fiance Jeremy is dead. So they told her it might have been a blood clot, but who knows? You know, like, he's like 30.
Right.
That's weird. Mm-hmm. She knows that he must have been killed, and Prentice tells her to get out of France and back to America where she'll be safe.
You're just like, sure. I find Sia very unconvincing.
She doesn't seem like she's a good secret agent.
No.
Like, if you were actually a secret agent, wouldn't you, like, always be on your guard constantly? Like, right. Doing
she's
that kind
so,
of
like,
work?
Blasé about everything.
She's like, he's dead. Isn't that weird? And Prentice is like, Ian Doyle is trying to kill you both.
Yeah, he's obviously he's been killed by Ian Doyle.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know. Seems like a stretch.
If I was a secret agent, I would just assume that somebody was trying to kill me all the time.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, so... we see Lyle and he's sitting on the couch and somebody gives him a beer and he calls her hun and he's like, I can't believe you got my favorite beer. And you're like, God, I hope someone kills Lyle. It's
right?
Clearly
they're,
Jane.
They're listening to Rush and he's a big Rush fan, obviously. Yeah.
He's like, this is the best bootleg Rush has ever had. And I'm like, please kill him. Please. Where's Molly with her stick?
Right.
So anyway, Garcia checks hospital surveillance records. Mm-hmm. And then finds Jane on the cameras, just following Molly and Gail around.
I guess, I don't know. It's very strange.
It's confusing, but they discover that Jane is like following them around, looking for these women and then intentionally copying a piece of their clothing and then using that to initiate conversation with them.
Yes. Which I can't imagine this ever working on me. If someone was like, oh, we have the same purse. Like, cool.
Okay.
Yes, they mass produce them. I bought it at TJ Maxx. Like,
yeah, especially because like these aren't people who have like a lot of money,
right?
So it'd be like, oh my God, do you have the same purse from Target as
right.
me?
Yeah,
and like yeah, and so do
so
thousands
does everybody.
Of other women.
Yeah, it's just very strange. Yeah.
So neither woman's family recognizes the woman from the surveillance videos, but also Lyle is missing. He wakes up cuffed to a bed and Jane tells him that she warned Molly about him a million times and calls him a cancer and says that she found the cure. She holds up a video camera and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to see a Jane and Lyle sex tape, please.
But you're gonna.
No. But we do.
Yeah.
We are treated to
the
it.
The technology. It's like when you would watch a movie in middle school and they'd wheel the giant box TV on wheels into the room.
Yeah.
She connects the tiny camcorder.
Yeah. But the thing that is weird about it.
Oh, is it the dirty talking?
That also is terrible. That's not the weird part about it to me. The part that I don't understand, and I don't know because this is not a hobby of mine, but like, who's the cinematographer here? Like,
I assume
there's
that
like
one of them supposed
shots,
to be holding it.
Shots of Lyle and then shots of her. And you're like, are you passing the
I guess
camera back and forth?
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, this is so
that is
uncomfortable to watch.
I really cannot think of a part of my life that I would want commemorated
less than that.
So it's really hard to say what's going on there, but they're
it's
super
just,
into
it. Just made
it.
Me think of the Friends one where Ross and Rachel make the tape and then they watch it and they're like, oh, gross.
100%.
But yeah, I was so confused by like the changing camera angles and stuff. And you're like, you didn't set the camera
right, it's not on a tripod. They're holding it.
They're holding it the whole
and passing
time.
It back and forth.
It's so weird.
It is very uncomfortable.
Oh, I hated it so much. And you know who else hated it? Molly. Yeah. Molly didn't really seem to like the video either.
Molly was not into it either.
No. But anyway, the team narrows down the possible suspects by looking for somebody who, I mean, I don't know why they didn't just use facial recognition software, but they don't,
they
even
don't.
Though they have a very clear shot of her face.
Mm-hmm.
They are like, we need a woman who lives near Onondaga Lake who had foster parents. And they're like, is it Jane Gould, this woman here? And it is. They found her and they found her address.
Mm-hmm.
So Jane tells Molly that Lyle didn't even care that she was missing and that she deserves better. And Molly's like, I do deserve better. I deserve better than Lyle and I deserve better than you because you're the worst. Mm-hmm. And then she pulls out her stick.
Yes.
And Jane's like, what are you going to do with the stick? But then,
and it's not much.
Lyle breaks the bed to free himself. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, say what you will about Lyle, but he's resourceful. He's using his head.
Yeah.
There are lots of guys on the show that we would have watched just flail around trying to break the bedpost.
Yeah. He just
or something.
Flips the mattress over, breaks the like slat on the bed mm-hmm. and then just goes upstairs and yeah. attacks Jane.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, good on you, Lyle.
Right. Yeah. I hate to root for Lyle, but here I am rooting for Lyle.
But yeah, they fight and Molly escapes really slowly, just hobbling her way there. But it should be okay because the BAU is like on their way right now anyway. So yeah, they're on their way. They learn that Jane was removed from two foster homes and engaged in self-harm, which Seaver is like, adolescent girls do that as a means of control, like eating disorders. And you're like, thanks for being here.
Thanks Seaver. For coming with us.
Yeah. They say that Jane sees herself as a savior. And then Molly continues to hobble along and flags down a car that's mm-hmm. coming at her down this dirt road, like really quickly. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh, Molly, no.
Molly, that's not help.
No.
That's not help coming for you.
And it's Jane and she just runs her right over.
Right over.
It's like the scene in Elf where he like rolls over the taxi. So the BAU arrives at the house and they find Lyle dead. I don't fully believe that Jane could take Lyle out in a fight.
Yeah, no.
I feel like he's a scrappy guy. He's probably been in some bar fights.
Yeah,
I agree. He hit Molly hard enough to break her jaw mm-hmm. at some point. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't have any qualms about hitting a woman. Like, right. I feel like he would have just beat the shit out of
Jane. No hesitation. He would have just gone for it.
Yeah.
I agree. I thought that part was a little too unbelievable. It was
a bit much, Criminal Minds. I don't know that I believe that. But yeah, so they head to the lake where Jane is about to kill Molly. She's mm-hmm. like standing neck deep in the water, mm-hmm. holding Molly up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they catch her right in time. Mm-hmm. They are on the bridge and they're like, drop her, get away from her. And Molly or Jane is holding a screwdriver mm-hmm. and she's going to stab her.
Look
through the sternum.
Uh huh. While she's,
holding her up.
You watched
in water.
Me last night try to stab a floating olive with a toothpick.
You watched me try to stab a little cocktail onion. Yes. It's really hard.
Can you imagine a body floating in water that you're trying to stab hard enough,
pushing it down? Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I would, you know, we were subjected to that car chase mm-hmm. last time in the mm-hmm. last episode. And I complained about that. Yeah. But I would have very happily watched 4 or 5 minutes of her just pushing Molly down in the water with the screwdriver and being like, why isn't this working? Like this woman. And she's very short. Like Jane, like mm-hmm. her arms are not long.
Right.
She's holding her up really high because she's, for whatever reason, really far into the water
for no reason.
For no reason whatsoever. I'm like, mm-hmm. what?
What is happening here? Yeah.
And a screwdriver. Bring something sharp.
Right. Like, I know.
I would have loved to watch that struggle just for a little bit while Molly was just like, please stop.
Like Molly, like, just swim away.
I know.
Swim away.
I'm like, I know you got hit by a car, but like, come on.
Come on, Molly.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I know. So bizarre. So bizarre.
But yeah, Molly's dad tells her that he loves her, and Jane is like being loaded in the police car, and she's like, I was just trying to help. But yeah, Molly gets loaded into the ambulance, and we get our second quote: there is no chance, no destiny, no fate that can hinder the firm resolve of a determined soul. Ella Wheeler Wilcox. Mm. And then Prentice continues to be harassed by an unknown caller while Ian Doyle gets off a plane and into a car. And I was like, okay, what's special about this? And then the camera pans over and the airport has a big American flag. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh,
he's here. I also really loved that none of the BAU tried to even get near that water. They just like let the local guys go. They stood far, far away from the bank and were like,
oh, no, we're from the city. We have nice leather shoes on. We won't be getting in the water.
Can you stop her, please? We're going to wait over here.
I'm surprised Morgan didn't like dive off the bridge in and like grab Molly.
We get nothing.
From her.
We get nothing as we should from this. Back
they're
and forth.
Very disinterested.
Well, at least we have not a white man. Our fourth of this season, bringing us to 77.8% white men, 22.2 not. Overall, 121 to 27, still hovering around, you guessed it, 82% white men. But how would you rate this profile as far as accuracy, plausibility, and helpfulness on a scale of 1 to 10?
Like a 2? This profile is nothing.
It's less than nothing. It does take up some time in the episode. I'll give it that.
Time that we could have been watching Jane try to stab Molly while she floated in the water.
All I could think about was the olive jar last night.
I know, it was so hard.
It's so hard to do. And I was using a toothpick, a plastic toothpick, which is probably just about as sharp as
a Phillips head
screwdriver into a human body. Like the textures and consistencies are relevant.
It was absurd.
It was absolutely absurd. There's no Hotch to watch here. He again does absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It's because they're so focused on Seaver. Are you telling me that none of the members of the BAU have this self-harm knowledge because it's about girls? They're like, we don't know anything about young girls. Even the one who was at one time a young girl.
No, they don't know anything about girls.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they got to have Seaver here for that.
And Prentice is otherwise engaged with her drama.
Right. She's very preoccupied.
Yes.
I get that with all the Ian Doyle-ness of it. Well, there's more coming our way because the next episode is Code. Does this go through the rest
code
of the
Code or Coda?
Oh, maybe it's Coda. That would make more sense.
I remember Coda. I'm like, wait, was there also one named Code?
I don't know. I wrote it down so long ago. Are you looking it up to correct me?
Well, I accidentally was looking it up, and instead of today I will or today I do, I looked up today I will, and then it took me to the IMDb for something called Today I Will Tell Her, and the description is a barf-inducing story about a guy who's going to tell his friend that he likes her as more than a friend.
Oh, my God. Men are the worst.
I want to barf.
Oh, the
today I do Criminal Minds. See if we can fix this one real quick. I'm an idiot. I'm so tired.
I know, me too.
It is Coda, yeah.
It is Coda. Yes. Okay, whoops, Coda.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's the end of the Ian Doyle storyline? Or are we
no, this is the one where Reed has to try to connect with the kid with autism.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Does the Ian Doyle stuff go on for the rest of this season?
I think it does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
It goes on for a really long time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So much to look forward to. Well,
I feel like this next episode is good, though.
I only remember that part of the storyline. Like,
yeah.
I
feel
don't
like this
details.
Is a good one.
I hope so.
Gotta me too.
Something to get us
I
through.
I also really hope so.
I mean, as much as I love this October Road arc, they're both just so ridiculous and over the top, but not far enough over the top to be
to
reflections
make it
of
fun.
Desire.
Yeah,
to be good. It's just not. It's not enough. It's an almost. But I really want them to swing all the way one way or the other. You know, I don't want the Appalachian Trail one. I don't want to go that far in that direction. But I would
no,
appreciate
I want
more
something silly.
Yeah, yeah. I need more silliness in my life. Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram at @TheUnsubIsAWhiteMan. Our merch is on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be trying to stab olives with toothpicks. Unsuccessfully.